The gap between us seems compelled to close. But then it doesn't. His cloud of heat leaves me, chased by a cold rush. He turns to the door. I seize the back of his robe. "Where are you going?" I say. "I'll sleep on the couch," he says, without facing me. "It's fine. I don't want you to sleep there." Slowly, he turns around, a glistening wonder blooming in his eyes. Just like after our first battle when he discovered I'd survived. "The bed is big enough for the both of us," I add in a spill of words, in case he's intent on misunderstanding me. I let go of his robe. My body feels charged up to the brink of endurance, ready to snap or shatter. The cautious wonder vanishes into him. His expression darkens.
"There's no need to act anymore, you know." "I'm not acting," I scowl, throat drying, heartbeat accelerating. "I'm really not."
His brows furrow.
"Then what are you doing?"
I snort out a laugh.
"Seducing you, I guess."
Surprise flashes across his face. I hold his gaze, untangling my fingers when I notice them clasped together, letting him know how serious I am, how sure. It takes him a while to find his words. He ends up repeating the same ones, but in a different tone, a more tortured one. "What are you doing?" He shakes his head. "You have each." It sends a shot straight through my heart, but I maintain my poise.
"I do. Does that bother you?"
"No, he's perfect for you." A hardness wilts from Shiming's eyes. "He's kind, he's brave, he's reliable, he..." Shiming blinks rapidly. "His skin is so smooth, it's like porcelain." I blink. Sometimes I wonder if Shiming's range of attraction extends just as far as Yizhi's. I don't know if Shiming would be comfortable expressing it, though. In my village, it would mark him as a target for heated gossip for sure. When Yizhi and I were chatting in bed about this a few nights ago, he said city folk don't care as much, but he's rich and from the capital. He has it a lot easier than most people. Anyway, that's for Shiming and Yizhi to figure out. This is between Shiming and me. Shiming staggers back. "Yizhi's the one you should choose." I lean forward with a growl, digging my nails into the edge of the bed. "Choose? Why do I have to choose only one of you?"
"You can't cheat on him."
"Cheating is deception. He and I have talked about this. He's secure enough to know it's not a competition, that any feelings for you don't cancel out the ones I have for him. He's okay with however close you and I get."
"He's just saying that."
"No, there's something he told me. Love can be infinite, as much as your heart can open. And my heart is open to you, Shiming." His face goes blank. He just stares at me. I don't know what it means. A sudden shyness rushes through me, bowing my chin. Maybe I shouldn't have crossed this line. "If it's too weird, that's fine. We can stay." Shiming steps close again. My head swings up. Our eyes meet, his vulnerable, mine tender. The opposite of what we're supposed to be. Even hunched over, his shadow eclipses me. He seems to become aware of this and sinks to one knee to regard me at eye level.
"Is this really what you want?" he whispers huskily. "If Sima Yi or whatever got to you, don't. You really don't owe me anything. And you especially don't have to pity me."
His eyes glide aside, and the rest of his head starts to follow. I cup his face with both hands to make him look at me. "I don't pity you, you dork," I say with a small laugh. "I cherish you." I skim my hands to his collarbones, feeling his rapid heartbeat at the bottom of my palms. "I cherish who you've managed to be, despite the world telling you over and over that you're wrong. You may have some undeniably monstrous parts inside you, but that's okay. I have them too. No matter what anyone says, I'm proud to call you my co-pilot, Iron Demon. His brows slacken. A boyish shine enters his eyes, the youngest I've seen him look. Our warm breaths quicken, swirling together. His mouth moves as if to say something back, but then he just lifts my chin and kisses me. His gentleness is a startling thing. It takes effort for a boy like him to be gentle, yet that's what he abides by around me. Our mouths move against each other's with a ghost of soft, slow murmurs. When we run out of air, he sits back on his knees, lifts my hand, and presses a kiss to my knuckles. The gesture scatters any last semblance of my defenses into vapor. And I'm proud to be your partner, Iron Widow. He looks up at me through his glasses, a hint of red tea sizzling in his eyes from his spinal brace, simultaneously demonic yet sweet. You know, that's not a very auspicious title, I say, though I can't control my grin. Charming lady, then. He runs his thumb over my fingers. Mei Niang. Fine. I do enjoy ironic nicknames. I hook a finger in his robe collar and pull him into another kiss, more aggressive this time, more urgent. The temperature shifts in the room. He lets me guide him onto the bed and over top of myself. His knees settle on either side of me, making the mattress rise against my hips. Only with him could I feel so comfortable being pinned down by someone so strong and imposing. His mouth comes down to meet mine. My mind overflows under the sensations of his solid flesh, his crushing weight, his intoxicating heat. I reach for his robe sash. His hand flies near my wrist, but then mellows. What's wrong? I whisper against his lips. What is it with boys and hesitating to show me their chests? I've got a lot of scars. He mumbles in the lowest register of his voice, the sound dizzying me, making me writhe beneath him. I'm not scared, I say on a fast, airy breath. He drops his hand, but he doesn't kiss me again. He hovers, chest heaving slowly and deeply. I pull the sash loose. Whenever I open the last layer of Ichi's robes, a calm gladness fills me like moonlight. Shiming's skin makes me feel anything but calm. I gape in awe at the landscape of muscles and scars across his torso. I wish I had his power. I wish I was him, yet I hate that he went through any of this. I can read his life story, the things he's bested and survived as if I were blind. I can't help but compare. The sterile ache of Ichi's tattoos versus the raw agony of Shiming's scars, born from different forms of pain. There's a reason Shiming has been the most powerful pilot in Huaxia for 2 years, and it has nothing to do with how easily he can carry me without breaking a sweat. To have kept choosing to wake up every day and face what life has dealt him, he is the strongest person I can imagine. Despite the endless horrors that we've both been through, I really am grateful that we survived to meet each other. Chapter 38. Forget Her Not. When the girl kisses me on the forehead in the cramped bunker we call home, a cold current of dread and panic cuts beneath the blooming warmth I'm meant to feel, because I know this does not have a happy ending. Get away, get away, get away, get away. She takes my hand and presses her lips to my knuckles. The gesture makes my heart shudder off a layer of grime, and soothing words flow from her mouth, yet the rising screams in my head drown them out. Run, run, run! I don't want to experience another second of this, but I'm powerless to stop the scenes from carrying me on like a tide. It's like watching a rabbit stumble into a wolf's den. Except she is no rabbit. Despite her tiny size and sweet face, her spirit pressure is a beast of its own. Together we activated one of the heaviest Hunduan husks ever to be salvaged. It took on the shape of a Zhu Que, a vermilion bird.
Our hearts were beating in sync as we did it. They say she is my one true match. Lies, 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 lies. Strategist Sima trains us. He teaches us to dance on ice. She teaches me to dance in fight. Ba Gua Zhang, the martial art of spins, wind, and evasion. Our steps leave spirals and coils of footprints in the snow. Our time together passes in circular motions, with neither of us knowing how quickly it's running out. Don't go into the... We think we are ready for battle. I think I can do anything as long as she is at my side. Don't go! But the Hunduins push back hard. The battle demands more and more power from us. It's all I can think about. It's all I can claw for. I don't realize it when I consume her mind. Don't go. I feel every nuance of her last emotions, like a silk cord slipping through my hand. The end coming rapidly in sight, yet I can't hold on. She is terrified of me. She regrets everything that led her to this moment. She wants nothing more than to get away from me forever. She gets her wish. I wake up drenched in tears, racked with sobs. Shiming is already holding me up, caressing my back, careful not to touch my bullet wound. It's still night. A sprinkle of city glamour glimmers through the wooden window screen, tracing the harsh ends of his chopped hair in neon pink and blue. I hate this! I scream into the dimness, clawing at my scalp. Get this out of my head! I'm sorry, he says. Was it one of my memories? I fall dazed. I should not be the one being comforted. That was his memory. Not some grotesque nightmare, not something he can scream away, but something he lived through. I dream about walking on daggers every night, you know, he murmurs tenderly. It feels like a nightmare, but I think it's just your life. It sounds about right, but it doesn't make me feel any better. I dreamed about her, I croak. It hits him like a bullet. His hand drops from my back and makes a small thud on the mattress. Winda? He asks on a lost ghost of a voice. I nod, grimacing. A long sigh leaves him, his eyes pressed shut. I rub his hand, warming it. It's coarse in some spots, but stunningly soft in others. An artist's hand, drowned by scars and calluses. That was the most horrible thing I've ever felt. I'm sorry. I'm sorry it got passed on to you. I wouldn't wish it on... No, that's a lie. He clenches my hand. I wish it on plenty of people. Not knowing what else to say, I draw him closer and lean my forehead against his shoulder, right next to the sharply scented steel of his army collar. He wraps his arms around me, stroking my hair absently. There's something fundamentally different about the kind of pain I endure and the kind of pain he does. My pain is solely due to being born a girl. I know it for sure. I know it's ridiculous, and I can hate and rebel to my heart's content. But for him, it's complicated. Wrapped up in fault, in guilt. A tangle of impossible choices, each of which has bound him into a deeper mess. Even when he did what he believed was right, the universe only punished him for it. I don't understand karma. A tremor comes over him. Winda was the one who was kind, innocent, and believed in better things. Yet I was the one who lived, and lived for so long despite knowing I was doing nothing but killing a girl every time I battled. I shake my head while lifting it from his shoulder. I take his face in my hands, my thumb skimming the prisoner tattoo on his cheek. You didn't do nothing. You were still fighting for Hua Xia. And it's not wrong to want to live in any circumstance. Sorry that I ever implied otherwise. I didn't value my own life back then. Since the day I was born, The world has told me I must accept whatever worth men assign me. And maybe, despite my nonstop rebellion, I did. They told me to choose between accepting their doctrine or dying, and I did. I chose death. It was the surrender that made me fearless. Tiny chips of city light quaver in Shiming's eyes.
It's okay. It's a messy issue with me.
I clench my jaw. What would Yi Zhi say? I try my best to channel him. You have to remember that pilots are tools, weapons. None of us have any real agency. It's the strategists and army higher-ups who are controlling everything in the shadows. And they were the ones who decided to keep sending girls your way. Any choice they gave you was nothing but an illusion meant to make you bear the weight of the guilt, so they didn't have to. My voice charges with fresh anger. Don't let them get away with it. That would mean accepting things as they are, and we shouldn't. He raises his eyes but doesn't look any less lost. What are we supposed to do about it? Something hits me. This is our last night in Gaoqiu's territory. In the morning, a hovercraft will take us back to the Great Wall. Anything I want to say against the army, I have to say now. It'll be much more dangerous to bring it up after I'm back in their grasp. If the counterattack succeeds, we'll have a lot of influence among the army, I whisper, gripping Shiming's hands. We could push for some changes to the pilot system. Right now, girls are only being paired with male pilots that have way higher spirit pressures, even if their own values are chrysalis capable. This can't be the best way to do things.
I'm not saying it is, but girls are naturally weaker in spirit than boys, Shiming says, soft and sad. How would we justify an overhaul?
I suck my teeth. Is that factoid even true? Or do things just seem that way? There's probably a girl with a higher spirit pressure than me in this city right now, but her family will never let her be tested because they know. My words, my whole train of thought derails as two pieces of a puzzle slam together in my head. I lurch onto my knees, facing Shiming straight on. Wait a minute. Girls have lower spirit pressures. Yet, those pressures can be sensed more acutely?
Yeah, he frowns.
Why? How? What makes a girl's spirit pressure fundamentally different from a boy's? I flash back to the butterfly Yi Zhi and I saw our last time in the woods. The one with both yin and yang wings. The casual proof that male and female are not concrete, unbreakable categories. Something. There's something not right here. I scour my fingers through my hair. Take Winda. She was supposed to be your equal. Why did she die? Shiming's posture crumples.
I wish I knew. Believe me.
I feel terrible about bringing her up again, but my mind is spinning so quickly towards something game-changing, something world-shattering, that I can't help but push further. Do you think the pilot system is rigged against girls in some technical way, beyond only pairing us with stronger boys?
Shiming's eyes widen with slow dawning horror. Why would they rig the chrysalises themselves? It would lower the number of balanced matches. They need those. One balanced match is as powerful as at least five unbalanced matches.
But would it honestly surprise you? Shiming's mouth wavers several times before he says,
No.
I scrunch a fistful of our red silk sheets. Then we need to investigate if it's possible, if it's true.
How? If this is really how the system is, it must be classified beyond classified. We'd never get access to proof.
My thoughts continue to race. My eyes dart side to side, then snap up. The strategists, the highest ranking of them, they must know, right?
They would never admit it to us.
Unless we make them. A dark energy pumps through my blood, faster, hotter, harder. The night before the counterattack, We'll be invincible. We'll be able to do anything, and they won't be able to punish us, even if they find out. I gulp. Anything. I don't speak in more than the most careful of whispers, yet it's like I fired a gun in the dim silence. What are you saying? Shiming's brows pull tight. Do you know how karma really works, Shiming? I snarl. It's not something that can be prayed into existence or counted on to fall from the sky. It has to be hand-delivered. A certain senior strategist has made us suffer very much. I'm saying we make him suffer too. So badly that he'll tell us the truth to beg us to stop. Chapter 39. That kind of guy, that kind of girl. Shortly after we get back to the Great Wall, the counterattack is announced, to considerable commotion across Shui and Tang. Not every reaction is positive. To quell the remaining doubts, we deploy into one last offensive battle to prove we can start the Vermilion Bird off in a stable form. With Yi Zhi in the cockpit with us, strapped into a side seat, the battle is so effortless that when it's over, I'm winded by disbelief as I look around the field of Huinduan husks. Victories have come so sparingly for us that it doesn't feel real for one to happen so easily. But it did, and afterward, the Huinduan stop attacking. The peace is suspicious. The strategists theorize that the Huinduans have realized a total clash is inevitable, and now they're holding back to have a bigger advantage on their own turf. The Shui Tan frontier borrows whatever chrysalises the other provinces can spare. The recharging they need from their journeys across Huaxia's rivers and mountains gives us a final 2 weeks before the counterattack is launched. Shiming has told me more about Bagua Zhang, the martial art Winde taught him. It's a beautiful style, but not a noble one. You're constantly swiveling behind your enemy, stepping into their weak spots and tricking them into making moves that hand you control of the fight. It's the style of those who can't win with brute force. It's how we spin our plan to trap An Lu Shan. Superficially, we obey orders and do every training exercise the strategists demand. But in the shadows, we move like snakes, coiling and winding around our prey and his daily habits. Then, the night before the counterattack, as most soldiers are distracted by the drunk pilots partying on top of the Great Wall, we strike. With a surge of his tea, Shiming heats a tin bucket of water past boiling, then splashes it over An Lu Shan. An Lu Shan jolts awake with a shredding scream. He seizes against the chains and straps binding him to a tilt table, the kind I was tested in to become Yang Guan's concubine. It looks hilariously small under his massive frame. The scalding water dribbles off his prominent brows and nose, mats his beard, and soaks his strategist robes. He was naked when Shiming dragged his unconscious body out of bed. But we took time to dress him, gather his hair into a topknot, and pin his boxy strategist hat in place. It's very important that he be immediately recognizable as himself. Shiming drops the steaming bucket. It ricochets off the metal platform we're on with several resounding clangs. We say nothing, letting An Lu Shan take in the situation for himself. The frigid, rust-clotted testing chamber he's woken up in. The bonds he has no hope of escaping. The camera between us glaring a red eye at him. "What is this?" he bellows, breath and wet robes misting in the icy air. Chains rattle as he writhes some more, but they just draw more cries out of him. His every movement must be blistering. An instinctive horror shocks through me, urging me to stop the suffering of a fellow human. But then I feel Shiming's presence beside me. Remember the way he suffered with a muzzle on his face and his veins full of liquor, and everything in me goes as cold and hard as the chamber's metal plating. An Lu Shan didn't treat us like humans, so why should we treat him like one? It was easy to knock him out with heavy-duty sleeping pills once we figured out his routine. Every day, he has freshly made steamed buns delivered to him from the training camp cafeteria. Hours ago, Yi Zhi bumped into the delivery boy hard enough to knock the steamer out of his hands, apologized profusely while offering to buy him a fresh batch, then pour the dissolved pills over the new buns before handing them back. "We have a few questions," I coo, caressing a towel in my lap like a cat as I sit in my wheelchair. "About the piloting system specifically. Tell us, in what exact ways is it rigged against girls?"
"Are you two out of your minds?"
An Lu Shan's face strains red. "Well, you made us this way." A grin stretches across my cheeks. "So talk. Talk fast, or we'll do much, much worse."
"Release me, now!"
I sigh, whipping the towel open. "Shiming." He fetches a bottle of liquor from a cluster of tools Yi Zhi planted behind the tilt table. An Lu Shan's eyes go huge. If he's assuming that we plan on following his example of force-feeding it to him, he would be wrong. We are not that uncreative. Shiming shoves the tilt table so that An Lu Shan's head swings near the ground. I press the towel over his squirming face. I thought Shiming would look happier to get revenge, but when he uncaps the bottle and crouches down, his expression is chillingly vacant. He upturns the bottle. Liquor pours out in a rhythmic glug, glug, glug over An Lu Shan's smothered nose and mouth. A wet, animalistic shrieking gurgles against the towel. The sharp scent of alcohol bursts through the chamber. Shiming grips the bottle tighter. The slightest hint of strain crosses his face. I remove the towel. Shiming heaves the tilt table upright. An Lu Shan wails harder and sharper as the alcohol crawls down his body covered with burns. His pain seems to electrify the very air. Too bad neither Shiming nor I have a high wood aptitude. Wood qi conducting out of fire-type spirit metal is an outright spectacle. If we'd been allowed to craft Yi Zhi a suit of armor, he could have shot green lightning out of it. His secondary qi was tested to be wood type. It would have been a great addition to this mix of horrors. "Talk!" I wheel out of the camera's sight. "We know the system is rigged against girls. Give us the specifics, and don't even think about lying. Sima Yi is going through the same thing as we speak. If your answers are different, we'll know." Sima Yi is actually safe and snoring in his bed, but it's believable.
Girls are naturally weaker pilots,"
An Lu Shan wheezes.
"That's just the way it is."
"I don't buy that. Shiming, let's continue." Table swing, streaming liquor, wet screaming and choking. "How is the piloting system rigged against girls?" I say, impossibly calm. An Lu Shan curses rapidly, starting to slur. Alcohol works fast when it goes right through the nostrils, which was part of our plan. "You know, we knew you'd be tough to crack," I cock my head. "But you should consider something. Is keeping the army's secrets worth losing your bloodline?" He jerks still against the tilt table.
"What?"
Shiming hands me a tablet from the tool pile. I hold it up, showing a picture of a boy strapped to a chair in the dark concrete room, a boy the age and build of An Lu Shan's son. It's actually an image doctored by Yi Zhi's company contacts, but I make no explanations. No attempt at verbal bluffing. An Lu Shan can trap himself with his own racing thoughts. He shakes his head wildly.
That can't be. You didn't.
"You have 5 minutes to tell the truth," is all I say. I open a timer on the tablet and prop it in my lap.
He's just a kid.
His hoarse voice breaks like glass.
A kid!
How is the piloting system rigged against girls? I repeat. No justifications, no room for negotiation.
Please!
He actually weeps. I motion to Shiming. He goes to flip the tilt table again.
The yank seat!
An Lushan cries. Shiming falls still, hand on a corner of the tilt table. What was that? I lean in. An Lushan breathes in shallow spurts, squeezing his eyes shut.
The yank seat has less active input, more passive input.
Every muscle in me tightens, quivering. The resignation in his voice is unmistakable. This is, at last, the truth. What do active input and passive input mean? I grip the armrests of my wheelchair with slick hands. Explain.
Active input is spirit pressure and neural signals from the spine.
He keeps his eyes shut.
Passive input is just qi flow.
Cold tingles sweep up my cheeks. So, it's like the difference between Shiming and I commanding the vermilion bird versus Yi Zhi simply supplying it with his qi. Glass shatters on metal, startling me. Shiming has dropped the bottle of liquor.
Are you saying, he breathes deeply, a girl's spirit pressure is actively dampened in a chrysalis?
Oh, he's thinking of Winda. Winda, who should have been his match, yet caved under his spirit pressure. It wasn't because she was weaker after all. It was because the pilot system didn't physically let her pilot at full potential.
Girls supply more qi,
An Lushan says, as if it's supposed to calm us down. As if that doesn't simply mean the boy is set up to drain the girl like a battery. Shiming storms away, armored steps echoing like gunshots. He braces himself against the steel-plated wall at the back of the platform. His fists tighten and loosen on the glistening metal. My whole body pulsates with the same realizations that must be crashing down on him. All balanced matches are not really balanced matches. A girl would have to overcome this artificial dampener to truly balance with a boy. The girl would have to be stronger, which explains why the female pilot in matches always seemed to have a bigger spirit pressure than her partner. In reality, we do. We must. And those true matches, matches like Shiming and Winda that might have worked out if the inputs had been equal, all were lost to the artificial imbalance.
I've told the truth,
An Lushan chokes through his pain.
Now let my son.
Why? I cry out, my voice clanging off the chamber walls. Why would the army do this? Why wouldn't you just make it equal? Wouldn't you get so many more matches?
Spirit pressures, too unpredictable. This is only way to be sure who comes back.
The boys, I say, tongue and lips going numb. To be sure the boys will come back.
Can't get eager pilots if they're afraid of their partners every battle.
You don't think girls are afraid?
Girls know how to sacrifice.
Nausea overwhelms me. I want to join Shiming at the wall. I want to smash my head against it until my skull shatters into blood and brains.
Let my son go.
An Lushan has the gall to keep pleading.
You disgust me.
My words warp out around a sob.
You all disgust me. Don't take this out on my son.
Horror blanches his features.
The girls knew. They knew they were more likely to die. They chose it.
No, I scream. Their families chose for them, and they didn't fight it. because they believed in that tiny fantasy chance that they'd end up in a balanced match. That has nothing to do with my son. He rattles against his bonds. Let him go. I shake my head over and over. Your son lives in a world that wastes the potential of half its population. All while the Huinduins are waiting just outside the Great Wall, waiting to pulverize us. We're heading toward our own destruction, and you think it has nothing to do with him?
Let him go! You promised! We made no such promise.
Shiming's voice booms through the chamber like a tangible thing, so loud it makes me flinch in my wheelchair. He turns around, Qi meridians igniting at full intensity, red intercalating with gold. I'm stunned. Then an ice-clear laugh escapes my mouth. Yes, let's cause An Lushan as much pain as possible. That's right. I stare into his eyes and hurl out a lie like a dagger. Our people killed him hours ago. A transformation passes over An Lushan. One second, a suffering and tortured man. The next, a wailing and thrashing beast that curses me with every name that can be spewed to degrade a woman. Shiming stomps back and flips the tilt table with a violent motion. An Lushan's curses hitch. Don't speak to my partner like that. Shiming glares down at him.
You won't get away with this!
An Lushan roars upside down.
They'll find evidence! You'll pay!
Shiming laughs, a deep, unnatural sound that pierces me with a twinge of concern. He grasps the heavy steel collar the army has clamped around his throat for 2 years. Light flushes bright red in his grip. Heat ripples near his hands, warping the metal. He snaps the collar off his neck and hurls it to the ground with the force of a thunderclap. Shivers race over my skin as the impact reverberates through the chamber. It's been so long since I felt any kind of fear around him that I've forgotten how terrifying he can be. Something has awakened inside him. Something not necessarily for the better. What have I done? My thoughts tangle up. What have I unleashed? But I catch myself the next second, because it's not me who has wronged him. It's everyone else. That kind of guy, they called him. That kind of girl, they called me. Well, here we are, meeting expectations. Whatever happens, you won't find out. Shiming fetches a fresh bottle of liquor. He speaks like he's finally embodying the iron demon he never liked being. He crouches in front of An Lushan, brandishing the bottle. It reflects the glow of Shiming's meridians, which have dimmed to a fuming red. I'm going to drown you with this, and I'm going to enjoy every second of it. It's such a tragedy, I join in with mock grief, lifting the dripping towel. Senior strategist An has gone missing overnight. Oh well, there's no time to comb every crevice in the wall for him. The counterattack can go on without him. Chief strategist Zhuge is helming the battle anyway, and he's way more likable. An Lushan seems bewildered for a moment, then bursts into hysterical laughter.
You think being heroes will protect you? Good luck! The moment you win is the moment you're free to be slaughtered.
Oh, no. I touch my chest. We have much bigger plans for that moment, and your confession will make it possible.
You won't be able to change a thing. A wild leer puppets An Lushan's face. Real women know their place. It won't matter if they learn the truth.
You know what I think? I say. I think this whole concept of women being docile and obedient is nothing but wishful thinking. Or why would you put so much effort into lying to us, into crippling our bodies, into coercing us with made-up morals you claim are sacred? You insecure men, you're afraid. You can force us into compliance, but deep down, you know you can't force us to truly love and respect you. And without love and respect, there will always be a seed of hatred and resistance, growing, festering, waiting. I dig my nails into An Lu Shan's upside-down head like roots pressing at pavement. Before you die, let me confirm something for you. Girls like me are everywhere, barely putting up the facade of wives and daughters and concubines. And I don't think they'll be very happy about the army's lies. An Lu Shan opens his mouth to spew something else, but I silence him with a towel, like he tried so hard to silence me. Shiming unleashes a nonstop deluge of the liquor once used to break his mind. An Lu Shan's last words drown in wet, choking misery. When we return to our suite, Yi Zhi rushes to the door in a flower-caked apron and a pair of floral-patterned sleeve protectors usually worn by kitchen aunties. "Hey, was the party fun?" he asks, his intense stare at odds with his fake cheery tone. "Come help me with dinner. I'm just about to fry some buns." Yi Zhi has used every anti-surveillance device he could get his hands on to prevent our suite from being bugged, but still, we take no chances. Shiming and I wrap our armor wings around ourselves to squeeze into the kitchen with him. My wheelchair barely fits. Yi Zhi turns on the exhaust hood and pours a lake of oil into a huge wok. Beside him, the counters are covered with foil trays full of homemade buns. A clay pot of Shiming's herbal medicine simmers on the stove, providing not only noise, but visual cover as well. Steam mists the windows in shifting, ephemeral clouds, blocking the view of any potential scouting drones. If this were any other occasion, I'd be laughing. Perks of refusing to play by the rules. You don't have to choose between the boy who'd torture a man to death with you and the boy who'd welcome you back with pastries after. But the camera sits in my lap like a bomb. I can't gather the strength to even begin explaining what we've learned. After Yi Zhi drops the first buns into the oil, filling the steamy air with explosive crackles and hisses, I hold up the camera. "Look for yourself," I say through my teeth. "Just look for yourself." Scowling, Yi Zhi takes the camera and leans against the counter. Shiming grabs a pair of chopsticks and takes over the bun frying, turning them in the oil. A heavenly scent soon fills the kitchen, making my mouth water despite the tension coiled inside me. Beyond the hazed-up windows, the drunken war songs of the party and pilots muffle through the glass. A grimy glow shifts over Ichi's face as he plays back the footage, holding the camera so close to his ear that he's watching with a single eye. For the first time in a long while, self-consciousness rises in me. He's watching me and Shiming at our worst. Normal people would be horrified that we could do this to another human and then stroll out with no regrets. When An Lu Shan's screams pierce through the camera speakers, however, Yi Zhi's gaze remains cool. He doesn't even blink. Only when the confessions burst out do his delicate features twitch in shock. He gapes at us, as if questioning whether we somehow doctored this footage. I return a stony stare, a silent, "Sorry, this is exactly how the world is." Honestly, after the initial shock, the information makes perfect sense. I'm livid at myself for not realizing it sooner. Girls are naturally weaker in spirit than boys. How did I not ask that crucial, "Wait, why?" for so long? How many aspects of the piloting system and the world in general are based on sterile facts, and how many are just illusions? Illusions that reinforce themselves generation after generation, because people don't question the convenient boxes they're penned into, the arbitrary rules they live by. When the footage ends, a sharp crack startles me. Shiming stands in the pale smoke of the snapping and sputtering wok, eyes shut, pressing an armored fist to his mouth. In his other hand, his chopsticks are now broken. His whole body is stiff with an effort not to tremble, as if he's detoxing all over again. "Shiming," Iju breathes, reaching for him.
"Sorry, I..." Shiming falls still. His eyes peel wide, irises kindling scarlet.
"No, I'm not sorry." He whips around. The chopstick fragments clatter to the greasy floor. Tears flow freely down his face from his demonic red eyes. "None of this is my fault."
"It really isn't," Iju says in a dark tone, with a somber look to match.
Shiming lets out a bone-dry laugh, shaking his head. He slaps the window. The foggy glass splinters under his armored hand. The glow of his eyes reflect as fuzzy red spots.
"All this time, all those girls."
I wheel closer and take his other hand. "I told you, you were being used." Iju leaves the camera on the counter and removes his sleeve protectors. With the clean hem of his student strategist robes, he wipes Shiming's tears away. "And remember, even if the circumstances were all wrong, those battles weren't meaningless." Shiming glances between me and Iju, eyes dimming black again. However, a different red glow appears in the window. I seize up, thinking it's a drone, but then Iju clears the glass with his hand. It's a paper prayer lantern, coasting above the Hunduan wilds like a blazing, flickering star, soaring toward the real twinkles that fill the night. A few more trail after it, but are quickly hazed into blurs by the steam and smoke around us. The three of us look to each other, then silently and unanimously decide to open the window. The dusty scent of the wild courses in on a fluttering wind, entwining with the burning smell from the wok. I fetch another pair of chopsticks and fish out the charring buns. The last thing we need is for the fire alarms to go off. A noise of amazement from Iju turns my head. A line of more lanterns has drifted out, mirroring the great wall, making a luminous orange dragon against the sparkling cosmos.
"For vengeance!"
The partying pilots shout from the stretch of wall behind this watchtower.
"For freedom! For humanity!"
"You pilots," Iju says without taking his eyes off the lanterns, half-up hair lifting in the night wind. "You do something important."
"But we can do better," I say.
"Yeah," Shiming says. He's not looking at the lanterns. He's looking at Iju. "We can."
His armored thumb strays over Iju's graceful jawline, brushing away a streak of flour. Iju's eyes widen.
"Sorry."
Shiming's hand bounces away. Iju looks at a loss for words for a few seconds, then schools his expression.
"Don't be, handsome."
He winks. I have to bite my lip not to laugh at the look on Shiming's face.
"Really, don't be,"
Iju says again, more serious, more breathless. His fingertips skim the newly exposed skin at Shiming's neck, mottled with red welts and scratchy scars from the abandoned collar. Shiming takes a shaky breath through his lips. Iju peers at them for a long, languid moment, then into Shiming's eyes. Steam and night air billow between them, countercurrents of hot and cold. The distant lanterns hang above their heads like a radiant bridge. My face warms and my pulse pounds against my eardrums. Is this really happening? Is it finally happening? Shiming's gaze pours over Iju's features, but jumps to me with a flash of guilt. I roll my eyes, make a triangle with my fingers, and nod. A chuckle startles out of him. Yiju laughs as well. There aren't nearly enough nice feelings in the world, so why deprive ourselves? He says in a near whisper, yet his stare pins Shiming in place with a different intensity. Shiming gulps. The last thing I needed was another reason for the world to hate me. Though now. Now? Yiju's voice goes as airy as the steam wreathing around them. Now I see. Shiming grabs Yiju's chin. It's all fucking bullshit. He slams the window shut with his other arm, then leans down and takes Yiju's lips with his own. My heart stutters, drawing my chest tight. But I'm at peace with this. Instead of a betrayal of any form, it feels like a completion. My killer boy, my sweet boy. The final line in this triangular formation we've been dancing in, making us stronger than ever. This is unconventional, yet another implicit rule we're breaking. But you know what? It works for us. And I think the three of us are done with letting this world tell us what's okay and what isn't. When Yiju and Shiming break from the kiss, they reach out in sync and pull me closer. Together, they turn to me. My heartbeat soars even higher into my throat. Well, now that we've gotten that settled, my laugh turns into a sigh, my eyes harden. Let's change the world. There's still one last thing to do. Trim the video to leave nothing but the confessions. We weren't bluffing to An Lushan about having a bigger plan. Right after we win back the Zhou province, in that precise moment of victory when all camera drones are focused on us, I will leave the cockpit, raise a tablet, and broadcast the truth to the whole of Huaxia. Part 4. Way of the Dragon. There is a deity in the mountain, with 6 legs and 4 wings, and no discernible features among its Hunduan chaos. Yet, it knows how to sing and dance. It is, in truth, the River Emperor. Classic of Mountains and Seas, Shan Hai Jing. Chapter 40. Scourge of the Universe. All 329 active chrysalises that have gathered at the Shuitan frontier set off while the stars still glitter above. We race in a spaced-out line across the Hunduan wilds, quaking the earth and juddering up gray clouds of dust. As predicted, there was a freakout over An Lushan going missing, but they couldn't delay the deployment hour. Daylight is too important. We'd be at a huge visual disadvantage if the battle dragged past sundown. We hid An Lushan's body in the lavatory of a random bunker. If they find it, I doubt we'll know. They wouldn't compromise morale by announcing something like that. Shiming and I barrel forth in the vermilion bird's standard form, claws smashing the ground, splitting it here and there. Wind slices over our wings and tail of long feathers. The white tiger and the black tortoise keep pace on either side of us, still within sight, though we're a considerable distance apart. The formation has stretched as widely across the plains as possible, so we don't have any significant gaps for the Hunduans. Countless armored trucks storm a safe distance behind us, looking as tiny as beetles, ramming through the dust clouds we stir up. They're carrying radio wave transmitters that extend the range of scouting drones and chrysalis speakers. Whenever they approach a new range limit, a line of them stays behind. If we destroy the closest line, it will blind the army from our further actions and prevent them from feeding commands to the other pilots. That's how we plan on surviving after broadcasting An Lushan's confession. I shouldn't even call them the army anymore. The strategists are just a bunch of senile string pullers who have never risked their lives on the battlefield. And the soldiers only deal with regular people across Huaxia, not the terror of the Hunduns. The real army is with us. Shiming's reaction to the truth gives me hope that other male pilots might feel the same fury. They can't all be heartless monsters, fine with feeling concubine after concubine die. If we're convincing enough, this unstoppable legion of giant transforming war machines could soon be ours instead of theirs. Then the strategists and the sages will have no choice but to bow. I catch myself drifting off into outlandish fantasies of the sages pleading on their knees and pilot concubines cheering on the Great Wall. Focus, I berate myself. We're not in human territory anymore. A Hunduan herd could charge out of the horizon at any time. If they somehow got past our line of chrysalises, it'd mean disaster since the Shuitan frontier is basically undefended. It's also why we can't broadcast the truth before taking down the Hunduan nest, no matter how much I want to scream it at the world every passing moment. The chaos it caused could mess with the battle too much. We do need to actually win against the Hunduans to guarantee our collective survival. Keeping our spirit senses active the whole way would be a huge drain of qi, so we're forced to trust the strategists and their scouting drones to alert us to any enemy activity. The Zhou province is so flat, it's like striding over a repeating glitch in the universe. Perfect for farming and herding, terrible for defending against Hunduans. Hence, the terrifyingly fast loss of the whole thing when they broke through over 200 years ago, and probably why they stuck to the Kunlun Mountains to make their replication nest. Even though it's all the way at the other end of the province, the mountain range remains faintly visible on the horizon, like a row of crooked teeth. There are no major natural bastions inland. I initially fume about how, for two centuries, the Hunduans have sucked these lands dry. Lands that are barren desert now would have been covered in verdant squares of crops and clusters of villages, one of them being my own, my true hometown, the place my ancestors toiled, labored, laughed, and sang for generation after generation. But then, after about 30 minutes, a lush forest rolls in from the distance and shows no sign of ending. Keeping contact with us via the speakers, Sima Yi explains that this is just how it is beyond the battle intensive zone. The Hunduans have freedom of movement, so they never exhaust any single area of qi and vegetation can actually grow. Huh. For so long, I've imagined the whole province as a wasteland. The trees are at least not an issue to trudge through. The vermilion bird's standard form is 50 meters tall, more than three times the height of most of them. However, an alarming wrongness squirms inside me as two century-old trunks and canopies snap and swish and collapse under our prancing claws. It's a disturbing cacophony of death and destruction. The noises rise across the forest as other chrysalises bulldoze through it as well. Birds constantly startle out, black against the brightening dawn, like a fluttering layer being ejected farther and farther west. And who knows what creatures are failing to get out of our way? It's baffling how neat and undisturbed the forest looks when Hunduans of all sizes have supposedly roamed it for two centuries. The closest answer to how they've gotten around without squashing everything is a pattern of round gaps in the trees. Each is big enough to fit the leg of a noble-class Hunduan. But the holes are so clean-cut, the only explanation is that they meticulously reuse the same stepping spots. That idea is simultaneously absurd yet disheartening. How can they be better at treating this world than us? I find myself looking for evidence that my ancestors even lived here. The sun, climbing steadily behind us and shortening the bird's shadow over the forest, glints off only the occasional flash of what might have been metal or concrete. Sure, the cities and towns back then were smaller, but to see so few signs. Dread hollows through me. We spend so much effort living these lives, yet every trace of their substance and meaning can be erased so quickly, so easily. For hours, no Hunduins appear, even though scouting drones are usually shot down by them after less than 20 minutes out in the wilds. It's not a good thing. It means the Hunduins have collectively retreated to the Kunlun Mountains, and they are ready for us. The Hunduins seem like such mindless mechanical beasts most of the time that there's something unshakably eerie about the concept of them thinking, making calculated decisions. It would be best to face us near the end, after the journey exhausts a good portion of our qi. There's a volcano at the heart of the Hunduin nest, Mount Zhurong, that acts like a portal straight to the hyper-concentrated qi in the planet itself. We might be able to recharge there, but it's also where all the replicating Hunduin larvae are. They'll give their everything to prevent us from reaching it. When the terrain inclines upward, approaching the mountains at last, the newest intel from the scouting drone sets me on edge. It's about to get increasingly misty. We won't have much of a visibility advantage after all. The Kunlun Mountains are a bad battleground to begin with. Many of them are shaped like chiseled stone pillars soaring toward the heavens, as if skyscrapers carved by nature. Fluffy trees spill over their rough tops and flood the many canyons between them. The Hunduins will have plenty of hiding spots, while our army will be forced to divide like rivulets to deal with them. Just when the first canyons rise into view, made by sharp peaks that slice straight up like walls, a column of dark smoke rises from one of the possible Hunduin stepping holes in the last of the forest. "Skies, is that man-made?" Yizhi says through a microphone connected to the cockpit speakers, something he installed to better communicate with us, but which is actually meant to make the Anlu Shan broadcast audible to the camera drones when the time comes. We also made him an open grid in the cockpit for ventilation and a view of something other than my and Shiming's unconscious bodies. Shiming and I both startle, causing a hitch in the bird's steps. The white tiger and black tortoise slow down in the distance as well, but we're closer to the smoke than either of them. We run even faster through the trees, squashing trunks like straw while zooming the bird's vision in on the source of the smoke. A person, dressed in furs, trots on a horse inside the hole, steadying the reins with one hand while frantically waving the other. The smoke signal is coming from something behind a horse. My cry of surprise spurts out loud through the bird's beak. A nomad. An actual nomad. Of course I know there'll always be nomadic tribes persevering in the wild, but this is the first solid evidence of life beyond the Great Wall that I've seen with my own eyes. His courage shakes me. What makes him dare to stray this close to a Hunduin nest?
Hello?
Shiming speaks through the bird as we slow to a stop before the hole, overshadowing it. Despite his heritage, he sounds as dazed as I am. The nomad shouts something I can't make out, so desperately that his face goes red. He pulls a weathered scroll of parchment out of his furs. He lets go of the reins to hold it open, unveiling a line of bold writing. My spirit quakes when I realize I can read it. It's Han script. That means he's likely not Rongdi, but a descendant of my people, those who didn't make it out when Zhou fell. "Can you cure the emperor?" the scroll says.
"Okay," Sima Yi speaks up before questions pour out of us. Truth be told, a few other chrysalises have come across these people as well. We're having trouble understanding their dialect, but they seem to be referring to Emperor General Qing Zhen. Now I can read the nomad's lips. Huang Di, over and over. Emperor. So he's really here then? I exclaim. Frozen and waiting for a cure for flower pox? We'll have to look into it after the battle. But speaking of flower pox, close your vent and don't lean too close. He could be carrying a latent strain that our vaccines don't work against. Rich boy, if you see any boils on you, inject the antivirals immediately. Got it, Ichi says. Also, shit, go! Pretty sure we just spotted signs of Hunduins. We swing our bird vision up, zooming out. The chorus of dying trees amplifies as other chrysalises kick up in speed and advance into the maze of canyons and pillar peaks. As much as I wish I could stay to figure things out with the nomad, Sima Yi is right. This has to wait until we finish off our own enemy emperor. We can't prod around the mountains with Hunduins around. Sorry, I say to the nomad before launching the bird into motion again, convulsing the ground and startling his horse. He almost falls off. He gathers the reins and keeps yelling, but he's inaudible under the symphony of chrysalis movements. Our frontal assault squad gathers, consisting of the strongest chrysalises in our army. They'll help us take down the Emperor Hunduin, while the others will provide peripheral support in a tightening semicircle preventing the smaller Hunduins from pestering us too much. We charge into the canyons, the white tiger and the black tortoise pouncing behind us. It's a little unnerving having to trust Qie Luo and Zhu Yuanzhang, but whatever grievances they have against me and Shi Ming and each other, I trust that they'll set them aside for humanity's sake. The gap between the first two pillar peaks barely accommodates the bird's wings, and the ones after vary greatly in width. Most peaks are over twice our height, jarring after we've towered over everything for so long. They splice up our view of the rest of the army as we move. Most other chrysalises appear in only brief flashes between rock. Anxiety builds in me. I've never felt small and vulnerable in a chrysalis, and it's somehow worse than feeling it as a human. I give in to the temptation to flare my spirit sense and scan the area for myself. It's a terrible idea. A massive spirit pressure crashes down on me like a torrent of ice water, drowning out all else. My vision flickers black. The bird stumbles. Shi Ming has to brace one wing against a pillar to stop us from buckling. Mei Niang? He steadies me in the yin-yang realm. I gasp, clutching his spirit form, winded. Are you guys all right? The black tortoise crawls up behind us, graceful as mercury, speaking with Xiu Ying's voice. Even though it's a prince class, the top of its gleaming shell barely comes up to half our height. Water types are the smallest of chrysalises. Xiu Ying is water dominant herself. So the tortoise's eyes don't light up visibly as she speaks, but it gives off a faint black aura all over with her increased qi conduction, thanks to water type's leaky nature. Yeah, it's just, I say through the bird with a strangled, disbelieving laugh. There is definitely an emperor class here. Hey, Sima Yi chides, stop wasting qi. I keep my spirit sense off as we move on. The misty calm in the air now feels like a massive delusion. When we finally spot the Hunduins, which appear as a dark clutter inside the trees between pillar peaks, something's not right. The herd is perfectly still, waiting. Hunduins are never still. They're supposed to be swarming onto us like bugs. It's weird, but at Sima Yi's urging, we crack the bird's wings and stomp toward them. The herd scurries away from us, shifting under the trees. Now we're really freaked out.
the whole assault squad hesitates to keep going. There's a long pause before Chief Strategist Zhuge comes onto all of our speakers. His grave voice fills every cockpit, creating an eerie echo through the canyon. He assures us that the strategists realize this is abnormal Hunduin behavior, but the herd is likely just baiting us into using Qi attacks to exhaust ourselves more. As long as we don't fall for it, we should be fine. We're still not that eager to follow the herd, but we have no other sensible choice. It's going in the same direction as the volcano. The fog thickens as we chase them. The narrow gaps between the pillar peaks make it so we have to constantly swerve the bird's colossal body or fold its wings. We gain on the Hunduins only when the mountains shift from pillar-like to more normal slopes. The temperature plunges from spring to winter as the elevation scales up. The bristly coatings of trees on the mountains become dusted in frost. With a thick fog also present, the world is swallowed up in so much whiteness that when Sima Yi screams for us to stop, that the emperor is right there, it takes me a second to see it. I mistook it for a mountain. Chills rack through me. I grip Shiming's arm in the yin yang realm. It's dumbfounding processing something that huge as alive. I cannot imagine encountering it in my human form. With a slow, shrill creaking, it creeps toward us. I can now see the six unusually long legs on the sides of it, jointed like a spider's, and just as thin-looking, a sharpness only metal types can achieve. It has to walk on the mountainsides to fit in the valley. Every movement of its huge body pushes a tide of chilled fog toward us. The common Hunduin scamper beneath its belly, as if children ducking behind a mother. A frozen black lake gleams past it in the foggy valley. The white tiger's eyes shine green as Qie Luo speaks up. Let's... A sudden pressure in the fog tightens around us. Something compresses the bird's wings against its body. We panic and thrash, but the pressure refuses to ease off, and we topple against a mountainside with a colossal boom, shaking off an avalanche of frost. Cries spurt out all around us. It's happening to the others as well. As strategists yell questions through our speakers, I glance around madly, trying to figure out what's going on. There's a white residue over every chrysalis. It's as if the fog is condensing into strings. No. Oh no. It's not the fog. It's spirit metal. I gawk at the Emperor. It has spun its spirit metal, its own body so finely that the threads can make webs. They must have been spread across the valley before we got here, disguised by the fog and frost. No matter how we fight, the webs just yield to our movements like mist, impossible to shake off. The strategists come to the same realization and order us to calm down, but their wavering voices betray how they had no idea a Hunduin could be capable of this. The emperor crawls backward on its spider-like legs. The webs shrink and drag us along. The threads slice into the bird's spirit metal, seizing me with my first ever flash of chrysalis pain. It's different from human pain. Less a physical response, and more of a mental trauma of being damaged. An overwhelming wave of emotion courses through me. Grief, sadness, anger. However, the feeling is so abrupt and distinct that I realize it's not natural. Sima Yi has warned me that Hunduin emotions can bleed through to pilots via certain kinds of contact. This must be what's happening. Just when I pray to the gods to never feel this again, a horrible song slices through my head. Humans! Scourge of the universe! A voice scrapes out of the dissonant melody like a nail scratching the inside of my skull.
Get out! Leave us alone!
A stupefied silence hushes the valley. Then, a fresh chorus of screams fills it, tea light pouring from the mouth of every web-snagged chrysalis. I'm part of it. Fear crushes down on me so intensely that I can't overcome it, can't reason my way out. I have no idea what this voice is. It's unlike anything I've heard before. The strategists can't hear it. They have no idea what we're shrieking about. The world seems about to end when a thunderous roar rumbles through the valley, puncturing through the screams. The white tiger rises against the web it's caught in. Green and black light split out from its smooth surface. It simultaneously transforms into heroic mode while ripping its signature dagger axe out of its chest. It swings the weapon against the web. I come to my senses. Why am I acting like I'm helpless? Taking down the Emperor is the reason we're here. Fire melts metal. On my call, Yi Zhi, Shi Ming, and I surge out our teas. A transformative tension builds in the bird, then it bursts toward heroic form. In the yin-yang realm, Shi Ming and I shatter into butterflies. Our minds swirl and spiral into one. We rise, claws extending into legs, arms morphing out from our wings, body turning humanoid like an armored warrior with a bird mask. We stretch and grow as tall as the Emperor. The web around us balloons out, but noticeably forces the Emperor to spin out more thread like a silk cocoon. More chrysalises calm down and follow our example. Lights dazzle through the valley, as if it has stranded a constellation. The Emperor rapidly diminishes in volume. It keeps backing away.
Leave us alone!
The voice growls again.
Leave us! Leave us! Leave us!
We gape at it. Is it this Emperor-class Hunduin that's speaking to us? Panic pushes close to overwhelming us again, but we can't afford to think about anything except winning. Crying out, we grasp the web around us and heat our hands with qi. The threads break off and slither away. No matter how much control the Emperor has over its spirit metal, it's all still part of its body. It must still feel pain through every thread. We morph a long bow out of our breastplate and flood it with qi so the web can't go near it. Our combined qi shines so brightly, a gold-tinged pink, that it flickers in our vision. We take aim.
Die!
The voice screeches again. The Emperor leaps onto its spider legs and lands with a seismic impact through the valley. Frost shudders off the trees, triggering another cloud of ice crystals. We stagger off balance. The black lake behind the Emperor shifts. It seems at first to be a trick played on our shaky vision. But then the frozen-looking water floods through the valley, around the Emperor, around us. A steel-cracking coldness accompanies it. Behind us, the water begins to rise, higher and higher, ink-black and glistening, rounding out almost like a...
Oh, fuck! Sima Yi shouts through our speakers. That's another Hunduin! Another Emperor class!
Our minds quake, almost splitting apart. How is this possible? Sure, water-type Hunduins can change shape slightly, but it shouldn't be able to go to this extreme. Somehow, the Emperor Hunduin's abilities have evolved beyond our understanding. What's more, fire is weakest against water.
Kill the metal one! Sima Yi keeps screaming. Now! Now! Now!
Our first instinct is to run. With a sonic crack of our wings that echoes through the valley, we blast into the air. Web strings cut into us, blinding us with pain. We frantically gush our chi across our whole body. Fog hisses away. The web expands away from the heat, but hovers in place, ready to snag us the moment we stop beaming. It's like setting ourselves on fire to stay warm. This cannot last long. Everything we want to do, want to accomplish, want to change, flashes through our minds. How have things gone wrong so quickly? This was supposed to be the easy part. Vermilion Bird, where are you going? Chief Strategist Zhuge yells hoarsely, "Do something, please! We have to recharge." We search for the volcano, which should be nearby, but do a double take on the valley. Our comrades crowd around the still-shifting Water Emperor, desperately blasting and stabbing and striking it, even as they're trapped in the Metal Emperor's webs. If we fly off to recharge, we'll be risking them all, especially the concubine pilots, who are disproportionately bearing the chi burden, while these chrysalises are fighting at unusually low levels to begin with, thanks to the journey across Zhou. Clarity surges into our minds. The direst enemy should have always, always been these alien invaders who have robbed us of our world, not our fellow humans. Nothing will matter if everyone dies. We have no time to set up and risk a ranged shot, so we drop like a meteor. We crash land against the Metal Emperor. It doesn't expect this, and collapses on its underbelly, rocking the valley yet again. "Tell the others to take us to the volcano after!" We roar for the strategists, then press a hand right where we can feel the Emperor's core. We pour our chi toward it. It blasts out like water hitting a spoon, pushing us up, but we furiously flap our wings and keep the stream going. Die! Die! Die!